From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on October 2nd of last year. The Democrat and Chronicle announced that editorial page editor James Lawrence was retiring after 22 years in the position. Rochester's largest newspaper had to make a decision. Is it time to change the approach to the editorial page and the role of the editor? Well, they've chosen what some say is a replacement for Jim Lawrence, but I suspect we're going to learn this hour that Julie Philip will be doing some of the same things and some very different things. Julie's got a diverse work history that included 25 years right here at WXXI. Now she steps into a significant role at the Democrat and Chronicle. This hour, we'll ask her about the future of her new industry and how she can help rebalance a ship. She knows this studio well. Julie Philip, congratulations on the new job. Welcome to Connections.
Thank you. Very good to be here.
You just said before we came on, a little odd to be on the other side receiving the interview this time, huh?
It is a little disconcerting. I feel bad for all the people I had in the hot seat.
Well, now you're in the hot seat. I will tell our listeners. I mean, I've known Julie over the years, and I've respected your work here, and it is going to be very interesting to talk about your work there. And I'm curious to know, before you decided to take this position, how often did you read the editorial page?
I think I read the editorial page online quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the editorials in the New York Times in particular, so I've always been a big fan of editorials and opinion pages. So I was a fairly regular reader.
And for those who say, all right, you're taking Jim Lawrence's job, it's different already, isn't it?
It is.
All right, let's talk a little bit about that then, because I think this is an important position for this community, even if it's different. Jim was the editorial page editor. Your position is called the senior engagement editor, and that encompasses a lot of different strands. Take us through that.
Okay, well, the editorial pages include an editorial, some columns, essays, letters to the editor, in print as well as online now. In print, they're doing quite well. Online, not so well. So one of my challenges will be to work out the online version of the editorial page. Will it look like the editorial page in the paper? Probably not. It can't, because it does now, and that's not working. So we're going to have to rethink and rework and reshape what editorial and opinion looks like online. But beyond that, I'm sort of in a sandbox with lots and lots of tools to look at how we really engage people around stories and issues in our community. So it's not necessarily a platform. It could be multi-platform engagement. So it might not just be us writing an editorial here and putting it online or doing something a little different online. It's really reinventing how do we get people to engage around the important issues in our community. And it's a wide open field. In a way, I'm writing the job description as I go along.
Which is exciting. Now, you say that the online situation there isn't working for editorials, and I assume you just mean in terms of actual readership or engagement. What's the metric that says it's not working?
I'm still getting familiar with mm-hmm. all of the metrics and all of the statistics and data that we have, but my general sense is that, yes, it's not gaining a lot of traction online. And there could be a number of reasons for that, and that's one of my jobs is to sort of dig down into that.
Are we going to see a change? Some papers have decided that they were going to change the number of days a week there will be an editorial, for example. Is that going to change?
It has changed prior to my arrival, even. They are doing fewer pure editorials. They're running some blogs, a copy from some of their blogs. They call them blogatorials. Mm-hmm. We're cooperating on some of the statewide editorials with some of the other Gannett properties to run statewide editorials. So we, as I've come into the position, it has already cut back a little bit. But I'm not necessarily sure that's the direction we're going to go. I have not made a final decision or even dug in that deep yet. I think editorials now are extremely relevant and could be really useful in this age when we are so crazy busy. You know, people are running around. They don't have time to dig deep into the news and always form their own opinion and know that they're getting all this perspective so that they have an informed opinion. And that's our job. We are the ones that are going to dig down deep. come up with the different perspectives, make sure we're incorporating them into our opinions and editorials, so that if we can find a way to dish up an editorial in a way that is interesting and engaging and easy for people to digest in their busy lives, it could be a really fantastic thing for them because it would be trusted. They know it's fact-based opinion. It's developed with people who have decades of experience in this community and have seen it come and go, and players doing different things. So if we can find a way to dish that up that is palatable to online users, I think it's going to be a really big, important thing, and we may be doing more, not less.
Before I get to your calls and I see the phone starting to ring, I should probably mention the number. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. We're going to start getting to your calls in just a moment. But Julie Phillips in studio, the senior engagement editor for the Democrat and Chronicle. What, in your mind, what bar did you have to clear before you decided, I will take this job? And I ask that because I've known you. I've known your work at WXXI. I certainly respect you and your judgment. So you had to think about a lot of different things. You had to look at an industry that is seeing lower circulation. Some newspapers across the country are going to 3 days a week or making other changes. What in your mind said, okay, I want to know this, or I want to clear this before I accept this position?
I think the first step was when Karen Magnuson, the editor, first sent me the job description, and her little note was, it's not your grandfather's editorial page. So I took a look at it, and it absolutely was nothing like an editorial page editor position, if you could see how it's spelled out. It's a very different animal. I have always been someone who likes to innovate and try new things, and I love challenges. I love going in, inventing things, and we did a lot of that here at WXXI. And so the whole concept really intrigued me. And then there was, of course, this concern, you know, and that was a lot of feedback I was getting from some of the trusted people I went to. Well, it's a newspaper. It's a newspaper. And that's where I started digging a little deeper, and B, it's not a newspaper. Every media outlet in town now is doing a million other things than their core product. You are, television
stations
are. Digital
storytelling, sure.
There is no such thing anymore as a newspaper in and of itself. It is one of our products. It was one of our content platforms. So here I'm walking into a newsroom that is the biggest and most experienced newsroom in the community, and they are really open to using video and sound and online chats and all of the digital tools that are out there. And they have the support staff. So I felt like if it's going to work anywhere, if this new world of news, local news, is going to work, this place probably has the most resources in the community right now to make it work. So going that step, I went in a little farther and I did start researching. You know, Gannett has had a lot of issues. They've just divided off their digital and their broadcast entities so that, you know, it's a little unclear what that will mean for the print products, which are no longer print products. So I hate to even call it that.
No, but I understand the distinction, yeah.
Yeah, so I did explore that a little bit. And the consensus I got was that, yes, Gannett print, traditional print properties, some of them are really struggling. Rochester is one of the strongest. So while you might see some of the Gannett properties being let go in the coming years, I don't think that the Democrat and Chronicle will be the first, the second, or anywhere near the top of that list. So I felt pretty confident that they're still strong enough on the bottom line, print products still making them quite a bit of money, that it won't be gone tomorrow. And the thought of even if I'm, you know, 5 years from now, I'm on the corner, you know, with asking for hamburgers, you know, I think even if that happens, I will have done my best to forward an industry that is so near and dear to my heart, that I will have done my best to leave for the next generation what I found so important during my lifetime.
Yeah, this is where I think you and I really agree. It does matter. Newspapers matter to communities. Strong papers matter. And regardless of what we think about certain aspects of the news or our ideologies, I think we should all want to see strong papers. And so I share that with you. It's one thing, though, to say, I think in 5 years we'll still be here. And it's another to say, I think we've hit bottom and I think we're going to grow now. And, I'm not hearing you doom and gloom, but at the same time, you've seen the restructuring that's happened at the Democrat and Chronicle, a recent round of restructuring. Do you get the sense, and did you ask, have we hit bottom? Are there possible more cuts to come? Or do you think we've hit bottom and we're ready to grow, or at least stable?
Well, I didn't ask because I didn't come point blank and say, have we hit bottom? I get the general sense that no, we have not hit bottom. I liken it a little bit to Kodak. They're cash cow. The little yellow box, they stuck with that as long as they possibly could and didn't prepare for the day that box was going to be gone.
Right.
What I see with the Democrat and Chronicle is the restructuring that has occurred is a dramatic response to their print product, still the cash cow, but they're making a dramatic response in order to put themselves in a place where when the cash cow is gone, they have done a very diligent, hard look at what needs to be there next. I walked into one of the other important things for me was to get a feel for what the newsroom felt like. After going through such a massive restructuring where everybody has a new job title and all this confusion and uncertainty, and I didn't know what to expect, and I did not want to be working in an environment where people seemed stressed and seemed unhappy and seemed, doom and gloom about their futures. And I was very pleasantly surprised when I walked in. Yes, there are some glitches to work out. There's growing pains. There are certain people who change is a little more difficult than others. But by our very natures, I think journalists are very good at change. Our days are constantly changing and constantly moving. And I actually sense a lot of excitement because I think there's a lot of people in that room who are very committed to what you and I are committed to. And they feel a little bit like pioneers, that they're being given the chance to try something new. If it doesn't work, they can try something else. They're being given an opportunity to shape the newsroom of the future. And I sense a lot of positive attitudes. And that was probably the clincher for me when I decided, I am willing to give this a try.
Talking to Julie Philip, the new senior engagement editor for the Democrat and Chronicle, a very significant position for her at the paper and significant in our community. Let me get to the phones. And let me also say, Julie, that there's something I'm really refreshed by, which is, well, you and I don't work for the same company, but I definitely want to see the paper do well. I didn't know if you'd come in here and tell me that everything is perfect, that nobody gets it, that the newspaper industry is thriving and poised to take off. You're giving me a very realistic view, which is optimistic but realistic, and I appreciate that. I just wanted to say that.
So, well, you're welcome.
Well,
I won't try to pull one over on you,
Evan.
I know.
I'm serious because sometimes, you know how it is. Sometimes you talk to people and they say, no, everything is wonderful. It's rosy. Everyone. So
I think it's really important for us to be in this era more than ever to be transparent.
Yes.
But at the same time, I'm an optimistic person, and I think that goes a long way toward getting things done. So
she is optimistic.
Honest.
On to the phones. This is Joni in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Joni.
Yes, I still get the morning paper and love it and read it from the front page to the back. My question is, most of my friends do the same thing, but we are retired. We are in our late 70s. And often we're surprised because we will ask our children a question about the news. And though we know all about this particular issue, they'll say, oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is it possible that the paper is being read and delivered to the houses in the morning to mostly older people? I understand that young folks are busy working jobs and taking children to daycare and so forth, so they don't have the time.
It's a good question. Julie, do you know the breakdown of how the age of subscribers in general?
I can't give you the exact numbers, but she's absolutely right. The print users are definitely skew much older than online users or non-users. And she's absolutely right. The whole experience of sitting down and reading a newspaper does not exist for Generation X or the millennials. It's very rare that, A, they have the time, and B, just the way they consume news today is much different. It's not even like they go online to the Democratic Chronicle. It's my understanding with the metrics we're seeing more and more, and it's not just the Democratic Chronicle, it's across the country, more and more of the younger generations are getting their news through Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, all those. They're looking at news all day long, but they're getting it in short snippets,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
30 seconds here, 30 seconds there. So I'm sorry, I forgot the caller's name.
Joni, yep.
Joni. They're not reading in depth articles, like when you're sitting down with a newspaper and a cup of coffee. That's not happening. And the other thing that concerns me is that a lot of the stuff that they're picking up off Facebook and all of those platforms is national. You know, they're not getting the same kind of dose of local news. And also, because if you're picking up things off of Facebook or Twitter, a lot of the times your friends and your followers and stuff are kind of like-minded. So you're sort of in a vacuum, too. The stuff that you are picking up off of those platforms doesn't necessarily represent all perspectives out there, because it represents the perspectives of your friends. So, yes, to answer her question, it's a bit of a concern.
Well, but here's what I don't know, because we're in the first real generation of a really mobile, using apps and Twitter and Reddit, as you say, to get news. When I was 22, I didn't worry about what my toddler was doing, because my toddler didn't exist. And I didn't worry about things being, you know, as you get toward 40, that I worry about now. And I probably read less long-form journalism at 22, though some, maybe more than my peers, but some more, less than I do now. And the same people who are, let's say, 55, 60, 65, 70, who get the Democrat and Chronicle, were once 18, 22, 25. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they were getting it at bigger numbers then. So I guess what I'm asking you is this, Julie, no one knows the answer. But just because the younger potential readers aren't grabbing the print version and sitting down and reading long form, does it mean that they won't the older they get? And are we going to see a wholesale change? Or do we essentially wait for that evolution into more of adulthood to occur anyway? You know, how do you sort of gauge just how much you need to shift?
I think even as they get older and want news, you're right, it's always the younger audience has never been a big, big news audience. But when they arrive at that state where they are a big news audience, they will not have had exposure or interest, or, you know, the print product will not be what they turn to. It's not what they're used to. I think they will want it in the way they've been getting, you know, the snippets of news and information throughout their lives. They're going to want it in a way, and in a way it's really exciting, because with all of these platforms, the digital platforms, they can engage in it a lot more. They can be part of it a lot more. So I really can't, and I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know the answer for certain, but I am guessing that they will not spend their lives, you know, scanning all of this news and being able to comment whenever they want and you know, playing videos and looking at pictures, and then want to sit back with a cup of coffee and a paper. I don't think they're going to, like, one day land and say,
you're not banking on the idea that this young generation will eventually evolve back into widespread print readers.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, very interesting. Back to the phones in Brighton. This is Paul. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, hi. I have a question for Julie. You mentioned that you're a reader of the New York Times, and I am too, even though I do subscribe to the DNC. But I have a question on editorial judgment. Yesterday, if you do remember, the front page of the New York Times, I don't know if you did see that particular issue, the Times put a photograph, possibly the largest single photograph they've ever put on the front page. It covered more than a third of the front page. And it was a picture of a new recruit to ISIS, apparently an American, who had just joined ISIS.
Yeah, from Minneapolis, I recall. Yep.
Pardon?
Yeah, a teenager from Minneapolis. That's right.
Correct.
ISIS.
That's right, from Minneapolis. Yes. And the text of the article discussed the problem of Americans joining ISIS, which is certainly something worthy. In fact, it's worthy of being put on the front page. But to put a full photograph like that, immense photograph, like I said, more than a third, maybe even more than that, of the front page, which clearly is going to give inspiration, motivation to other potential recruits to ISIS. Do you think that was a good judgment on the part of the editors to put a picture of that scale on the front page of the New York Times?
Paul, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Julie.
I didn't actually see the front page of the New York Times yesterday, so I'm not sure. I guess I would really like to see the picture before I weigh in. But if he's saying a smaller picture would have been more appropriate, I'm not sure if that would have made a difference.
He's saying it inspires recruits to ISIS, and therefore the paper should have made a different decision about using it.
I think that sometimes if we're... And again, not having seen it, I hate to have too strong of a statement, but I think if we're afraid of telling people something because it will inspire them to do something bad versus telling people something so that they know that's out there, that that's happening, and therefore our decisions and policies should reflect the fact rather than sticking our heads in a hole in the ground and we're, you know, either being ignorant to the fact or unaware of the fact that that's happening, or pretending it's not happening, would make for very, very poor policy decisions. So I think sometimes being in your face, yes, it's like, you know, I worked at the medical center for a couple of years, and there was a lot of talk about suicide. And if somebody's threatening suicide and you think or they might be suicidal, should you ask them because they might get more suicidal? Well, no, it doesn't. It doesn't make them more suicidal. Research shows that if you ask somebody, are you thinking about suicide, it's a relief to talk about it and have it in the open and then bringing different perspectives. And I feel, and again, I did not see
You're speaking
the picture,
more broadly,
but,
I know,
but
yeah.
In broad sense, the more, I love it when people disagree with me or show me something that might be dangerous, you know, that because then you know it's out there. And then you can make decisions and policies that counter that or take that into account. So I'm not sure that it was a poor editorial decision.
Julie Phillip, the senior engagement editor for the Democrat and Chronicle, is my guest for the hour. And we've had some questions online already about just sort of how certain editorials or opinion pieces end up making their way into the Democrat and Chronicle. I'm curious to know just how you plan to approach community outreach. Jim Lawrence obviously did a lot over 22 years, did a lot in the city of Rochester. I think he's still going to be involved in Unite Rochester, if I'm correct about that. Mm-hmm. But what's your approach? And take me through, if you could, how editorials end up, you know, the subject matter, how it's chosen, and how you will go about that process.
Okay. Well, right now, and again, I've been on the job for 2 weeks, so I'm still learning
Maybe
how
different
to
in
turn
two months.
My computer
sure,
on.
Sure, yes, absolutely.
But the editorials that appear now, by and large, are a product of the editorial board meeting, which is a weekly meeting of the editorial board, and occasionally, separate editorial board meetings will occur with a newsmaker, for instance. Congresswoman Louise Slaughter came in recently. And so we will sit down, the editorial board members will sit down, talk about some of the issues, bounce ideas around the room, really kind of settle on where, you know, based on fact, based on the experience, based on... the history of this community, trying to take in as many perspectives, we will then sort of come to a conclusion about how we want to present our opinion. And then one of us will write that opinion. And then we'll kind of share that again to make sure that it kind of reflects what was discussed in that room. I think that in the future, I don't know exactly how this will play out, but I was thinking the other day, you know, as a journalist, whenever we wanted to get different perspectives or make sure we had, you know, the man on the street perspective, we would go to, you know, a diner or a barbershop, which tended to give us the perspectives of retired people who needed haircuts, you know. Now we live in an era, and as much as it is a challenge for us to have all of these digital platforms and tools, it is also a huge boost to journalism to be able to say, you know what, we need to know what all the perspectives are and what all of the people are thinking in our community and where general sentiment is. And, you know, we need a mother of a four-year-old. We need it is so easy today to reach out to people and bring perspective in. It's still pretty unwieldy. It's very difficult. So if I'm writing an editorial or the editorial board is bouncing this around and we're trying to get a real sense of something, there's not necessarily a good means of doing that yet. But we have so much opportunity to make the editorial really inclusive of different perspectives and to really make sure that we're, you know, for as much of experience and you know, training and fact-based journalism and all of those things we need to write good editorials, we still don't know. It goes back to the previous question. All of the perspectives out there, all of the thoughts out there. And if someone reads something and they don't see themselves in it, they don't feel their perspective is reflected in it, they tend to dismiss it. It's making sure that we're more inclusive. And so somehow I'm going to be working on getting that done.
No excuse, in other words, to not include all the voices from our community.
No, no. Yeah. I think that we have tremendous opportunity, and our job now is to reach out and grab it.
The phones are on fire. Let's get a very short break in, and we're coming back with your phone calls for Julie Philip, the new senior engagement editor for the Democrat and Chronicle, who's in studio with us for the hour on this Monday afternoon on member-supported public radio. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And just to illustrate Julie's point about how the world has changed in terms of journalism outreach and availability, our friend Tom Proietti is listening from Parker, Colorado. Nice to have you listening from afar, Tom. The WXXI mobile app, which I don't know why anybody wouldn't have it now. Let me get back to the phones. TJ in Rochester. Go ahead, TJ.
Hi, it's CJ.
Sorry about that.
I just wanted to quickly comment. Moved back here from Boston, and you probably are aware of the success that the Boston paper, the Boston Globe, has had digitally. So I'm hoping that you'll look into some of the things that they've done. And I wanted to tell you, too, I read a lot of my news on Facebook, but I'm reading long articles. I'm a subscriber to The New Yorker, for example, and I'll read articles from The New Yorker or The New York Times that show up on my Facebook line. I would love it if the Rochester paper would show up on my Facebook, because I may not be sitting down with a cup of coffee, but I'm reading it when I'm on the bus, and I'm reading it when I'm standing in line, and I would love to have local news and opinion available to me on my Facebook line, and if it showed up there, I would read it. I know that other people in my family, we all get our news. Well, not my dad so much, but
sure.
You know, other people do. And so we would read the line, we would read it if it was available. And I love having articles and things sent directly to Facebook.
Well, CJ, hang in there. Stay on the line for 1 second because I might want to follow up. Let me let Julia respond to that. Go ahead, Julia.
Yeah, thanks, CJ. And yes, you know, I haven't had a lot of time to dig into what they're doing in Boston, but there are success stories all over the country. And on another note, Gannett has senior engagement officers or editors at other properties, too. And we're going to work together to work on what worked in your community, what can work in our community. But there are polls showing that people are very interested in news, but it just has to be delivered in a way that's accessible and interesting and engaging. And that's what we're working on. And hopefully we'll have something for you soon, CJ.
Super. Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time, to join the conversation. Let's stay with the phones. And Carlene in Rochester. Oh, I'm sorry. Before we jump in with you, Carlene, go ahead.
And it's not just, you know, I am taking over Jim Lawrence's job with the editorial pages, but I'm also working with the reporters in our newsroom to work on engagement. There's also a community engagement editor, Sheila Ram, who will be working with me as well to help the reporters connect their stories with our online audience in a way that newspaper reporters are not used to being personalities and in the same way that broadcast reporters are. So we're going to be working a lot more on engagement and digital storytelling with the whole room. So it's not just editorials that I'll be working on. I'll be working with those folks too.
In other words, you want CJ to be able to see their work in showing up in their Facebook feed, but their work is out there now. It's just a way of making sure more eyes can see it in different platforms.
And that it's in a way that's, that you're going to want to read it. You know, figuring out it's there. CJ could find it now. It's clearly she's not finding it easily because she's very interested in it. And once it's found, we want to make sure that it's in a way that you're not just reading the headline and moving on, that you're engaging with it. So those are the things we're going to be working on.
All right, Carlene in Rochester, go ahead.
Yes, the difficulty I find as opposed on the digital as opposed to the printed word are the inordinate amount of pop-ups and other litter of advertising in such a way that it really does take away from following your articles. Whether the articles are bisected by advertising, whether they're popping up to the right or the left. The biggest problem is that you think you're going to a site to read something, and next moment you're being redirected to some, what do I want to say, maybe more frivolous topic that you really are not that interested in. So as much as I appreciate some of the access, you have... Everything is about a quarter of an inch deep in terms of getting the message. There's a few things that come through, but it does not surpass the printed word because in the printed word you can go back so easily without being distracted. Advertising is where it's supposed to be, and my dad was in advertising for 37
years. But Carlene, let me ask you, if you see those pop-up ads that can be annoying to you and probably to others, are you a subscriber to the paper?
I share a subscription with my neighbor.
Okay.
And I'll go to the library and read. Where I really notice it is the sensationalism, which was just what that gentleman was mentioning about that picture. I think the newspaper does some tremendous in-depth reporting, but so often you might just as easily be reading about spinach at Wegmans as opposed to something that's going to take the nation down. So I think the way it's accessed on the site is a little more complicated than you would like it to be, and it also takes you away from the meatiness of the article or being able even to comment.
Carlene, I actually don't know what your complaint is, though, because, again, you say sensationalism like the man pointed out. Julian and, frankly, myself, I don't think there was any sensationalism on what I saw on the cover of the New York Times, the front page of the New York Times yesterday. Talking about ISIS recruiting in this country is not necessarily sensational.
I don't have any problem with that. I agree with him about the picture. No, I have no problem with them covering the art. That's very important to cover. But to cover it not in a way that you're going to become a media star or there are many unfortunate people who are drawn to causes for many different reasons, and sometimes they're suicidal. So there's different issues. I find that the DNC, as I say, has some really fine articles, but it, unfortunately today, their in-depth articles seem to be given a lot less weight than the, so should we call more social?
All right, well, I've got to let Julie jump in here because we got a lot of people lined up to talk. But Julie,
yeah,
go ahead.
I think in general, our priority is actually on more in-depth reporting and more targeted, really getting deep into things. So I think one of the things, and this is in general, not just the Democratic Chronicle, it's for every news media or even media outlet out there. There is so much there. And it seems like the ones who get the most attention are basically the loudest. Not the most accurate, not the most fair, not the most unbiased, the loudest. So the folks that are trying really hard to do that kind of, if I'm getting at her question, that traditional, you know, very hard-hitting solid journalism of the newspapers have been trying to do that while still getting noticed. And so I think media around the country are trying to find that balance between how far can I push it and still be respectable, in-depth, and really great journalism while still getting eyes to look at me and all of this fray out there that I can stand out next to a picture of, you know, pick a celebrity and her latest selfie, you know, that I think a lot of organizations are trying to find that balance. Maybe we don't always hit it, and maybe that's what's bothering the caller. But I know that is something that we're all working on.
Well, and on that digital scale, before I get back to the phones, if you're waiting on the phones, we are coming to you because we're going to try to cover a lot of ground in the last 15 minutes with Julie Philip, who is the new senior engagement editor for the Democrat and Chronicle. I read a fascinating piece just a few weeks old from Martin Langeveld, who writes for writing for Nieman Lab. And he actually writes a new site called News After Newspapers. Now, the nice thing is we're not after newspapers yet, but he takes a very serious look. He's been in publishing in the newspaper business for about a quarter century, and he looked at digital revenue, online ad revenue. I can go back a decade, and I remember meetings at Channel 13, and the hope was that, yes, as traditional advertising revenue fell, that online would come up and maybe start to meet it. We haven't seen those two meet. We know that since 2001, the newspaper industry has shed about 20% of its journalists in this country. And the New York Times, according to Langeveld, reports that they're converting only 3% of their unique visitors online to monthly subscribers, only 3%. He writes that if the New York Times is only converting 3%, then most other newspapers should assume they're going to do about 1 or 2%. First of all, is that about right?
You know, I don't have the exact numbers. I've been starting to review those metrics. I think the general sense is, yes, the conversion rate is a lot lower than we would like it to be. And that's one of the reasons for the big shakeup, the big restructuring of the newsroom, is that we have to find a way to convert and get more digital subscribers and to find a way to do that. You know, I am optimistic, and I think that there are plenty of opportunities to do that. And we're also in a world where, you know, we think that everything should come for free, you know, the internet for free. And that just is not, it's not going to happen.
I agree with you, Julia. And I've been saying, I mean, you spent 25 years at WXXI, and you know, obviously, we rely on members. And I've said it on this program. I'm not afraid to say that. I don't apologize for pledge drives. We need the community to support us. But in the same way, the community has to vote with their wallet to support the Democrat and Chronicle in some way. But on that digital side, it just hasn't achieved parity. I mean, I'm looking at the numbers from Newspaper Association of America's 2013 revenue report, $16.4 billion in print ad revenue, only $3.9 billion in online ad revenue. So about 4-1. And here's what Langeveld says about something that newspapers maybe should do. Believe it or not, he says it may make sense to go to 3 days a week. And he writes, quote, with a good chance of actually increasing cash flow, a good chance of building additional digital revenue streams, a good chance of actually picking up new younger readers, and a good chance of building a new business model that can be viable in the long run. Why aren't more seven-day newspapers contemplating a switch to a 1, 2, or 3-day week print publication schedule coupled with a robust online presence? Every publisher who reads the tea leaves knows the seven-day print model is doomed. Heck, every reader looking at a flimsy Monday or Tuesday paper knows it. Why not take the plunge now, strategically, rather than sometime down the road, out of desperation, when it's too late?
The decisions of this level are being made at a much higher pay grade than mine, but I do get the sense that Gannett has everything on the table, that they are looking at, you know, I said in my column, you know, breaking things. And I truly believe that there, I don't know what exactly is on the table and how far those things have gone, but I think that that is another one of the reasons that I felt confident going into this job, is that they're not trying to do the same old thing and hope that it sticks. You know, that somebody will come around and say, ooh, you know, we really need that back. This is a mistake. We can't let the papers die. I don't get that sense at all. I get a sense that they have everything on the table and that they're ready to break some things.
I'm curious to know whether you would be more on Martin Langeveld's side, who says, look, if they do this, it's because they have to be pragmatic. It doesn't mean you go away. You build your online presence. You find readers where they are, and you embrace the future, even if that means 1 day, 2 days, 3 days a week and a robust online presence. Or here's Craig Huber, who's an independent research analyst with Huber Research Partners, who says, quote, by cutting back on print publishing, newspaper executives are betting they can wean loyal customers and advertisers from their daily print newspaper habit while at the same time driving them to their own website. But industry analysts like me are warning that readers raised on a daily newspaper appearing at their door will lose a sense of loyalty if it arrives only a few days a week. It would be like having CBS and NBC going dark on nights when they do not sell much advertising. It is risky because you invite readers to go elsewhere if you do that, he says. So he's saying, don't do it. Risky. You're going to lose people. Langeveld saying, it's the future. Do it now. Don't wait. I mean, again, it's a new industry for you, but are you feeling a pull in one way or another?
I'm appreciating those two perspectives, and I will definitely give them some serious thought, but I can't give my opinion on that at this moment in time, no.
And would you at least say, you wouldn't think that if the Democrat and Chronicle went to 3 days a week, it wouldn't be an insult to the community, for example. Some people have said, you can't do that. You know, that's what newspapers are. If that ever happened, how should we take it?
I think some people would be upset by it, and that should be taken into consideration if that were to ever be considered. And I think that they have every right to feel that way.
I think it's a good thing if they do feel that way. It means that they're invested in you.
And then maybe they'll work together to figure out what would work better, you know, for everybody, and understanding that, you know, if it's a pragmatic decision, and I'm not saying it's even on the table.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know.
Right.
But if we're making a pragmatic decision that affects someone in a negative way, it's great for us to hear that. And I think it's great for them to hear us. And that's why when we started out this, you know, I think it's really important for us to be transparent.
Yes.
To really explain, you know, if it was a perfect world, we wouldn't do it this way, but we're trying to make this way as perfect as we can. And so I think it's important for us to get out there and lay out our reasons for making changes, because there are a lot of loyal audience members who need to really understand that. And I think the only way for us to do that is to explain it to them. So if we make big changes like that, I would definitely want to be in the, you know, out front explaining them.
Back to the phones. Joe in Rochester wants to talk about community outreach. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi. It was actually Gerald.
Gerald. Go ahead, Gerald.
Yeah, it's fine. So I am, first of all, I'd like to agree that I appreciate the optimism. I totally and you have to be optimistic and a problem solver in order to face many of the issues that we have today. And personally, I'm currently a partner in a project. It's a nonprofit community outreach project in Rochester, not officially nonprofit. We're just not taking dollars. I'm trying to do a community outreach product with an online presence, and I'm just wondering if you have any tips or tricks on connecting with the community while having an online presence in specifically the Rochester area.
Tips on outreach. So, Gerald, what specific is the question for Julie Phillips? Julie Phillip? I'm sorry. You threw me with your question.
I'm just curious if she has, if you have any idea on what are some good ways to engage the community that we're in right now, to engage Rochester while also having an online presence and getting them to come to your website and things like that?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's the name of the game now. Thanks for the call, Gerald. And Julie, engaging people in new ways online.
Yeah, I mean, I think you really have to know your audience and find out where they are and go there. I don't know enough about his organization to give him any really helpful advice.
Okay.
But I think knowing your audience is pretty important and going to where they are. And you know, it's the same as my job, getting them to tell you what would work rather than you deciding this will work. And, you know, get their perspective on how, you know, talk to them.
And to kind of zero in on a couple of points you've made throughout this hour, on knowing your audience, understanding that especially younger readers are not necessarily sitting down with a print version and reading long form, but you also said we want to do more investigative or deep dive journalism as you look around the community and perform that service. So just because you look at younger readers as maybe not sitting down with the print version and reading long stories doesn't mean you won't write long stories and do investigative journalism.
Oh, absolutely not. And in fact, I think having investigative journalism is extremely important, and I think that's maybe our best chance to, you know, go viral is with some really original, useful content. So my job will be figuring out ways to take that great journalism and making sure people notice it and engage with it and feel like they're represented, their perspectives are represented in it. I can say 100% that the good journalism, the in-depth journalism, that is still a high priority.
Tom writes, Gannett used to be very active in schools with newspaper and education. Any new ventures there?
I'm not aware of any. You know, I did just start a couple of weeks ago, but I can say that one of the things I'm really interested in is media literacy. I think that that's part of us being transparent is talking about media literacy and talking about how and why news is important to our lives, to our democracy, to, you know, and I'm not sure that I know media circles talk about media literacy a lot, but I'm not sure it gets beyond those of us in the media. And I think I'm in a position now where maybe I can start to work toward that. I don't know if it means newspapers in the schools, but it might mean something in the schools.
Your predecessor is, I don't know if that's fair. Jim Lawrence is sort of your predecessor because, again, he retired at the end of last year. Your position is different in some ways, but he was out speaking actively to the community in person in groups a lot. Mm-hmm. Will you do that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you'll see a lot of folks from the newsroom out. I when I walked in, I said, you know, I'm a boots on the ground editor. I want to be out there. I always used to say that here as a news director, and I'd see people sitting at their desks, all the reporters, and I'd say, you know, news is not happening in this newsroom. Get out. You know, and I really know the value of a journal, you know, having been a journalist who had a beat and was out there every day. Of being out in the community. You don't know what you don't know when you're sitting at a desk, when you're out talking to people continually, getting their feedback. You have a much broader perspective about the issues and about your community. So I absolutely intend to be out as frequently as I can possibly get away from my desk.
You referenced the value of beats. So let me gently press a point here, because when I look at your newsroom, I see the Patties and Singers and the David Rileys and the Gary Craigs and wonderful journalists. But I'm not sure after the restructuring that there are beats the way there used to be. I don't know who the City Hall reporter is anymore. Should I be worried about that at the Democrat and Chronicle?
No, absolutely not. In fact, I'm really, that was another reason I started looking at the restructuring when I was, you know, considering this position. And I said the same thing, you know, where's my City Hall reporter? Where's my county government reporter? And like I said, they're breaking things. They are trying, everybody has a beat. It's just a much different way of looking at a beat. And in many ways, I think it's a much smarter way of looking at a beat, because City Hall makes decisions that relate to public health. They make decisions that relate to housing. They make decisions that relate to all these different areas of expertise. So rather than having a government reporter covering these different areas of expertise, you now have someone who looks at lifestyle and housing looking at decisions that are being made in City Hall. Or you have a health reporter considering decisions that are being made at a policy level and how that might impact health. So in a way, it's a much more fresh way to look at a beat. I think a much more inclusive way and a much better way maybe to get some good stories. It's not what city government did today at the meeting. It's I'm out in the community and these people are experiencing this because of what somebody at City Hall did yesterday. So it's just turning beats on their head a little bit, I think, and I think that's pretty exciting.
We have seen this community try to engage on issues of race, poverty, et cetera. Unite Rochester is trying to tackle those things. I think some well-intended efforts do well, some do not. Starbucks is learning a pretty good lesson with the whole baristas talking about race thing. But let me kind of start to close with you with this here. When you look at your time in Rochester on what has worked and what has not, that we know that we've got a concentration of poverty that's very real and very serious in this city. What is, do you view yourself as having a role as community engagement editor in moving that conversation significantly?
Absolutely. That is another issue that is so near and dear to my heart. The disparities in this community are sickening. I mean, it's wrong in the sense that at a human level, but it's also really destructive to our community. If we think we have a healthy, vibrant community, and I think in many areas we do, but we could be a much more healthy, vibrant community if we address some of these issues. And I've got to say that whether or not you see like concrete results happening from Unite Rochester, I can remember a time when we couldn't use the word racism in our reporting. People didn't, you know, this is 15, 20 years ago in Rochester. We would not have said the word racist ever. It just would have been too upsetting. It was like one of those words you didn't go to. I think, you know, there is a general willingness now to at least look at it. And it is such a complex problem. And every solution involves another, problem. And so it's not going to solve itself overnight. It's going to take decades to undo. But the fact that we're talking about it, I think, is a really big step in the right direction.
Well, amen. I don't believe in third rails. I've never understood why we can't talk about race or politics or religion and those things. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Why not?
And we're going to look for much more from Julie Phillip, the senior engagement editor for the Democrat and Chronicle, who's been generous with her time today because, as she said, only a couple weeks in, I'm sure you've got plenty to do.
I got a few things on my list, yeah.
Congratulations again.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And I hope that you will occasionally drop in and continue the conversation.
Absolutely.
Here. Your staff is here quite often. We enjoy having them here on this program and the great work they do at the Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, that's Julie Phillip. Short break. We're talking the grand jury system next hour on Connections.